Welcome back, guys, to the JPS Education Portal Roundtable. And we are here with Dr. Mel Moore and Mackenzie Baker. Welcome, guys. And today we're going to be talking about contest prep, the pros and cons. So many of you who are coaches or competitive athletes will have some understanding of the benefits and drawbacks of a physique contest prep. And maybe those of you who are looking to get into the sport or coach athletes will find what we have to say today useful. So first and foremost, Mac, I'm going to hand it over to you because I just learned a very interesting fact about you that you've competed before, which I did not know. So, Mac, I have so many questions. Tell me about this contest prep. When did you do it? You competed in men's fitness. Give me the lay of the land.
Shit. Well, I think it probably was like 2018, I think. ICN Men's Fitness, which also known as Men's Bikini. So I did that. It was like a really short 8 week prep. I just kind of said to the owner of the gym where I was working at, because I used to be PT for those who don't know, I just wanted to do something that was challenging and I just wanted to see how far I could take the sort of physique thing. Within obviously only a few weeks, like a very short prep. So I dieted down, did a lot of really stupid things, like very bro-ish things to get there. And like bro-ish, but also a lot of Poliquin-esque stuff mixed in. So stupid as anything. And yeah, I did the competition and then sort of had some issues after with controlling my food intake and, being so preoccupied with food and also probably some body image stuff there as well. And that was very hard for a while. And then sort of crawled out of that. But I tend to not really talk about the fact that I competed because, like I said, it was an 8 week prep. It wasn't very serious. To be honest with you, I regret doing it. I'm not overly proud of it. And yeah, I'm a little bit shy about talking about it. For a few reasons.
Perfect. So we'll talk about that plenty more as the podcast continues. Mel, tell us first a little bit about yourself and obviously your area of interest and where you've spent some time with your studies and degrees, and then obviously your contest prep experience.
Where do I even start with that? First of all, Mackenzie, love your honesty there. Could definitely relate to a lot of what you said. A little bit about me. So, I have always been interested in performance psychology. I think it really put me on a path to where I am now with study and also personal life. So, did the Bachelor of Behavioral Science, postgrad in psychology. Went to do a Master of Sport and Exercise Psych, so straight after the 4th year. But at that stage, I'm really showing my age here, but it was only offered every 2nd year at Vic Uni back in the day. So I wanted to stay in the loop and ended up knocking on a few professors in the field of sports psych and stumbled on the best supervisor I could have wished for. Professor Tony Morris. So he does a lot of work in the area of imagery in sport. Did some voluntary work with him and he introduced me to the idea of a PhD. Didn't even know what I was getting myself into. So I think I've really been reflecting on my journey in competing in bodybuilding. And I think the PhD in the bodybuilding is definitely up there with one of the hardest things I've done and also the one of the like best accomplishments that I can look back and say that I achieved. So that took me on a 5 year journey. So I've done a PhD in exercise psychology. So I was looking at the relationship between depression and physical activity, which I think like I had a population group that was overweight women with type 2 diabetes, but I think the whole issue around behavior change can be applied, to all populations really. So then I worked in research for a few years, realized that, when you're doing something you're not really passionate about, like you get that inner feeling. So I had that, and I knew that I always wanted to go back and practice, but unfortunately the PhD doesn't allow you to do that. So went on another journey, which I'm nearing the end of a Master of Sport and Exercise Psych. So, and I'm absolutely loving it. Like, yeah, it's really reinforced an area that I'm like, I just love it. Find it very fascinating, the interplay between mind and body and how we can get the best out of ourselves and the situation that we're in. And it doesn't just, for me, it's not just on the sport field, it's in life. So I really do see it as life skills.
Awesome, awesome. And talk to us about your contest prep experience. Where did that fit in all of this study?
Yes, gosh. I don't know how I did it, honestly. But when you know, when you've got your reason, you got your purpose, you really make it happen. So back in the day, I did the INBA National Physique titles, 2009. Actually, before this this podcast, I was just had photos up. It's like a real trip down memory lane. I love it. So I've been weight training since I was like 16. It's been my thing. And similar to what you're saying, Mackenzie, like I wanted to see how, like I was at the point where I wanted an extra challenge to see how far I could push myself. You sort of like dance on the razor's edge, I think, with competing. So it was a personal goal. And sort of unlike Mackenzie's experience, I think it was about a 25-week prep. But it wasn't as if I was going from scratch. So you sort of build up, you know, a good muscle base. But yes, so a 25-week process. Does that kind of answer you?
Okay, perfect. So 25 weeks is a much longer experience compared to 8, but nonetheless, like it can all be extremely difficult, challenging, and have benefits and drawbacks in any case. So, Mel, I guess start with some of the benefits you saw in competing. I know a lot of contest prep athletes, they tend to come out of it with a somewhat bitter taste on their mouth, especially if they don't do too well, or when they go through exactly what Mackenzie was explaining earlier, that, you know, food focus, losing their contest prep shape, they can have a bitter taste in their mouth and not necessarily be too fond of, you know, physique sports. And you do see this quite often, bar some of the diehard physique enthusiasts. So if you can look back and see some of the benefits, what benefits did competing add to your life?
Such a good question, because I think bodybuilding and competing provides a really good platform, you know, for a lot of qualities and strengths that you can take away. For me, it was like a massive, I learned so much about myself, you know, and it's when you put in that arena, you know, you get chucked in the deep end in some ways because it's challenging. There's no two way about it. You know, it really does push your limits as to like your ability to withstand that and come through it. So I think for me, I learned a lot about my ability when I put my mind to something. So it provided a good platform for mental toughness, which, you know, is a, some people might call it resilience. There is a little bit of a difference there, but it certainly built up, you know, my capacity for resilience. And a few things too that I think is a real benefit is when we look at like the fundamental, three fundamental needs, psychological needs. People listening might have heard like the self-determination theory. And I know, Jacob, we've talked about this a bit. But
Mackenzie, he loves self-determination.
Oh, okay, awesome.
Froth it.
Sorry?
Froth it.
He said froth it.
So it provides like there's so much autonomy. At the end of the day, it's your choice. You know, in every moment you choose. You know, are you going to choose an action that's going to move you towards, you know, you jumping on the stage and knowing that you've did the best that you could, or away? So there's that autonomy piece. It provides a space for competence, you know, your mastery, you're achieving something, you know, you watch the transformation. And a key one is that even though like it is us on the stage, it's a team sport. Like there's no two way about it. And so that relatedness piece is so important. That's what I found personally. You know, it's a sport that can be so isolating, you know, in my experience. Like there were so many nights and days where like it's almost like your world or your bubble decreases. And so knowing who's in that in your arena with you, and that coach athlete relationship, like I was blessed that I had a really good coach, you know, that could not only sort of understand or be objective from a physical point of view, but it's such an emotional journey. So I felt safe, you know, to bawl my eyes out on several occasions and question, why am I doing this? So for me, that like those things are a real good benefits, among others. I could go on, but I might sort of take a breath.
Yeah, no,
and see where you guys are at.
I think you hit the nail on the head there, and I think bodybuilding is like, you know, not many sports or endeavors are empowering in the way that bodybuilding or physique sports are, because they do give you quite a lot of autonomy over the process, as you said. And I think not only that, it's the ability to engage in an activity where you're rewarded for delaying gratification. And I think that's a huge benefit that you can take and transfer to other areas of life. Because when you do a physique show, like you have to, you know, abstain from all the, you know, little pleasures that are so easy to just say yes to day to day. And learning how to do that is a skill, and one that can be sharpened through a, you know, physique journey in many ways.
Absolutely.
And I think that's certainly a lesson that I took from bodybuilding, transferred to other areas in my life, you know, such as business and things like that. Like, you know, those little lessons that if you look for them in a contest prep, they're certainly there. And I'm sure many people can go through a contest prep and not realize these things. It's all about, you know, the end result. Did they win? Did they place? Did they get that plastic trophy? And can they put in their Instagram that I came, you know, third place at Bikini Mama, you know, at the, you know, local Bendigo show. But that's not really the point of a contest prep. I think you can get a lot more out of it than just
so much out of it.
Good photos and a rig. But I also think, if I can add to that, Mel, certainly the introspection, like forcing, you know, you're forced to understand yourself, because you don't have much else but, you know, yourself and your thoughts and, you know, demons to deal with. But one I took away was the planning and organization that's required to get through a prep, because you do have to micromanage a lot of things in your life to just deal with the dire nature of semi-starvation. Like, if you're not planned and organized, you know, you're not going to get your meals in, or you might, you know, be caught without your meals, and that's not what you want, because your hunger is just through the roof and you'll make a shit decision. So you really are forced to be process orientated and have exceptional planning and organization. Again, transferable skills that I think not a lot of other sports, will impart like bodybuilding does. And I've played a few, so I can only speak from my experience on that, but certainly there's some benefits that stick in my mind. Mac, is there anything that you can look back on? I know yours is probably, as you mentioned, not an experience you want to talk about too much, but was there anything that you can look at and say, hey, I guess that was, you know, that was cool that I got that from bodybuilding?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like,
besides
for me, it was, for me, it was the routine and structure, and, you know, pushing yourself in that regard and being organized and, you know, having a sense of a purpose. I mean, short-term purpose, but, you know, having that drive. I think the biggest benefit was, just the grit, you know. Like, my prep wasn't long, but it was very, very aggressive, very bro.
And I imagine.
Think, you know, a lot of like myself today, and I think a lot of nutrition professionals would look at what I did and how intense it was, and were like, that's like, you know, kind of negligent. But yeah, so those benefits. And I think, you know, I've come to realize that one thing that maybe I haven't maybe been so true to in the last couple of years, but certainly more so from like a lifetime perspective, is I just love identifying as someone who, you know, isn't lazy, who works hard, who will go sort of above and beyond. And upon reflection, I think one of the draw cards for me to actually say, hey, I'm going to do this competition prep thing, is that I wanted to live that identity, that perceived personal value of mine at the time. And upon reflection, like, it served that, it served, you know, the building grit and all those sort of things that I mentioned before. I think the sour taste in the mouth for me was probably more along the lines of putting so much time and effort into something that I realized I don't value.
So to cut you off, Mac, do you think that that's
all right, mate,
something that you don't know until you get off stage? Because I don't think many people, because I see that, and I see it a lot with my clients at times who compete. But I think once they're so invested and they're said they're going to do this and they start that
process, tunnel vision,
and it's very hard to have that realization and that awareness until you get off the stage.
Like, yeah.
It's like the bug. I heard like a lot. Oh, you'll get the bug or you won't.
Yeah.
Is that like, something that you've, because I never got the bug. So, but it wasn't until, like you said, it was after I'd competed that I looked back.
I just committed. I
want to do
that
again. I just kind of like, I'm of the attitude, once you say you're going to do something, you kind of lock it in. So as soon as I said that, I was kind of too far gone. Like I was going to finish doing the prep. But it's more like thinking about the things that I stopped doing in my life to facilitate not just that prep, but also the phase in my life where I was quite into training and nutrition at quite an intense level. And things were deleted from my life that I'm like, why? You know, like you don't even like bodybuilding, you know? Why'd you do this? I think I got sucked in because my environment at the time working at a gym, it was sort of just a thing that we all spoke about and we all trained together and it was sort of like a natural progression. So I think I was heavily influenced by the people that are around me. Part of me probably thought that it would bring me some kind of benefit. I'm not sure what that was. Maybe that's from a business perspective. Maybe that's from a reputation perspective in the fitness industry at the time. None of those things actually were true or mattered or ended up being coming to fruition. But yeah, it's an interesting one. But yeah, this conversation, what you said there, Mel, and as you as well, Jacob, they've almost brought new ideas as to why I actually said to myself, I'm going to do this. Maybe reflect on why that actually ended up being the case.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, Mac, like you, many people go into a prep for the wrong reasons. And because they don't understand the sport. And I think that's a huge issue for a lot of people, because I would dare say that physique sports are an extreme sport because semi-starvation isn't a joke. And given the risks associated with a physique contest prep, such as, you know, eating and body image disorders and a number of other, you know, physical health risks along the way when you get that lean, I think it's certainly something not a lot of people think about, and they don't realize that, okay, to look this way, because it looks great, right? And it doesn't look that hard, but you don't see what's you know, behind the surface and what goes on day to day to look that way and all the things that you have to give up. And I think that's the real test for whether or not somebody is doing it for the right reasons, is because when they walk off the stage, they're not too fazed by what they had to give up because it was worth it. Because that goal was, they valued that goal more than they valued the things they had to give up along the way. And some of those things are, you know, your social life, you know, obviously certain foods and time spent doing other things, whether it's career and things like that. And I think that's a real important factor for people to think about if they are going to compete themselves or to 100%. Recommend somebody else to compete, is, are you going to be okay giving these things up for the duration of this contest prep? And will that have any consequence on your life if you were to have to do that? And I think that's a conversation that probably isn't had enough. I got the bug, unlike you both. I did two contest prep seasons back to back, which was extremely problematic. And I think I got a lot of the benefits, as I spoke about. And I got other benefits. And this was one of the reasons I did, because I wanted to enhance my credibility within the fitness industry and to boost my business. And it certainly achieved that. And it ticks that box, like, to no end. Like, my PT business went through the roof because everyone saw that I was competing. I was an early adopter. Like, this is back in, Mel, you were even earlier than I was.
Thank you.
I was competing. It's okay, Mel. You were what? You're still 21, so don't worry about it. This is back in 2011, 12, and 13. So this is well before Instagram, bodybuilding, fitness influencers was a thing. So I was like one of the only bodybuilders that anybody knew, you know, of my age. Like it wasn't a normal thing to do. So I wasn't sort of pushed into it like most other people were. I had sort of very clear reasons for doing it. And although I got a lot of the benefits, the main one was, as I said, the recognition for knowing how to manipulate a physique and people wanting to come work with me. But I certainly had no idea or understanding as to what some of the ramifications were going to be as a result of that. And I suffered, you know, with eating disorders, body image disorders, none diagnosed, but I fucking absolutely had them for years. Because after my second season of competing, I was 69 on stage in October. And by the December that year, so not even 2 months, I was 95 kilos. So I gained 26 kilos in like 2 months. So pretty solid. And that was so embarrassing as a PT and someone who used to look that way to then look like this. Like everyone was like, what the fuck's happened? That I actually had to take myself out of the country, remove myself from the country and my gym for a month and go live in Thailand. And my sole goal while I was there was, okay, I just got to watch normal people eat and figure out how to eat like them.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that. And I lost 10 kilos in that month-long trip just by, okay, I'm going to have a bowl of cereal, not worry about my protein. I didn't train for a whole month. Like, I'd never done anything like that, like, because I lived and breathed bodybuilding. But I had the self-awareness through bodybuilding to realize, hey, something's not right here. I've got to figure this out because this isn't healthy. But that was something that I had to then deal with for probably 5 or 6 years after that, like learning, unlearning a lot of the things that bodybuilding forces you to learn as
a survival in some ways. Yeah.
Like even sometimes I see myself now getting like small spoons and stuff to eat like my cereal and stuff because then it takes more. And I'm like, why the fuck am I doing this shit? Like just get a spoon. Who cares? I don't do it often now, but like when I do PLS, I automatically trigger, I don't want to do that. Like that's not good. So I think it's a lot of the benefits won't outweigh the drawbacks unless you know what you're going into and you're somebody who really, really values the sport, loves the sport, is genetically blessed to the point where you're going to excel in the sport and get a lot of other benefits beyond just stepping on the stage that one time to say, cool, I did this really hard, challenging thing. Like if you want a hard challenge, there's a lot of other things that are going to have a lot less risk long-term than stepping on stage and competing in a physique sport. Like go hike a mountain, right? Mm-hmm. Once you do it and come back down, you're safe. You're fine, right? You do a contest prep, some of those drawbacks from that can stay with you for a long period of time. And I think that's an often forgotten component of a physique contest prep. Do you guys have any thoughts on that, Mel?
So many.
Share.
Again, so many. And I feel like it's one thing watching a contest prep, another thing experiencing. So that's one thing I'm blessed that I have a felt experience when I hear others' journey. I mean, every journey is unique, but there is, as you said, Jacob, those sort of shared threads. And for me, like at the time I was doing my contest prep, I was doing a PhD. I was sessional teaching at Vic Uni, and I was also working in the city doing in recruitment. And one of the biggest drawbacks for me was, and Mackenzie, Jacob, you'll have the nutrition hat on, but the lack of energy that my brain had available, I just could not think. It got to the point where, I just could not. That was one of my draw cards, among other sort of health reasons, but that was not a joke. So I totally agree with you of understanding the ramification with other priorities in your life, like this, because this will be consuming and it will demand that in a lot of ways.
But yeah, you just reminded me of something in my contest prep. I remember, so similar to you, I don't think many people will know this, or they might. I studied law for 3 years whilst I was running my first PT studio and doing a contest prep all at the same time. And I was studying on campus. This was well before online learning as it is today. And my brother Sam was studying at the same university. And I used to have to get him to drive to university because I couldn't stay awake in the car. And I
had the similar experience
on the road. Yeah.
Yeah, danger's dangerous.
Yeah, like little things like that.
Yeah,
You do become
little
dangerous.
things like that.
Yeah. And you look like a meth addict and your parents and your family worry about you and
Yeah, even at to the point where I'm like, am I actually going to jump on stage? Like, I feel like a skeleton.
yeah. It's just called a body image disorder, Mel.
Thank you. No, but it's I love what you're saying, and the fact that that level of self-awareness, which I think is really important, you know, in either it will bring it out or knowing it entering into a comp, which I think is important. Because disordered eating, it's an interesting field. Like when you think about, maybe I'm going off a bit of a tangent here, but you've just brought it up.
This is fine.
How, you know, there's the spectrum of eating disordered and disordered eating. And it's like, in some ways, bodybuilding is its own context. And it's hard for someone who's not in the field to understand, oh, you weigh your food. Like, what's that about? Or like that you're more conscious. It's sort of, it then kind of brings up that kind of, what is normal? That is the thing. It's kind of like, I come from a very non-pathologizing lens in a lot of ways, but I would love to hear your take on the nutrition side of things and how you tackle that. You know, from a bodybuilder competing and then living in society where perhaps that is probably seen as more of a unnatural way of living.
Yeah, I think Mac will probably answer this well, but I'll just give my two cents very briefly. I think with bodybuilding and coaching athletes with what I know now, you're basically teaching people how to transition into an unhealthy relationship with food and body, and then how to hopefully help them transition out of that. Because essentially that's what it is. You know, in order to survive the demands of a contest prep, you have to do some pretty unhealthy things, and like you need to be. You need to behave in ways that are not conducive to psychological well-being in any way, shape, or form. And then once they step off stage, it's like, how do we get you back to a place of normality and health, psychologically and physically, as soon as possible? And that's not something that you know, there's a set path or plan for with every client because it varies from person to person. I have some people who compete, get on stage. They gain some weight afterwards and they're absolutely fine. It's like water off a duck's back, no issues whatsoever. And the people who are typically like this, like a lot of tradies, you know, like blokes who just don't really give a shit and they're just doing it cool. They wanted to look good, pick up some chicks, whatever, move on to the next kind of thing. But you tend to see it with people who are, you know, overthinkers, probably a little bit more, you know, emotional, like, you know, emotionally intelligent. Like they're the ones who tend to suffer a little bit more from this. But Mac, what do you think in terms of, I guess, some of the nutrition related drawbacks and how you manage that in and out of a contest prep?
Well, I'll start off by saying what you said before, Jake, I fully agree with. For a lot of people, the cons, and I will discuss the cons. The cons, but the cons are worth it. Like, and the biggest example that always comes to my mind is Brandon Kempter. Like, I've spent a lot of time with that guy, and the way he talks about like a lean body part is low-key weird, but also you can see that the guy genuinely loves bodybuilding. Like, it's not
This
about, no, it's not so much about competing. It's definitely not about Instagram or anything like that. It's just like he loves the process and he loves the art form of it. And like,
Who's
I
that?
see
Sorry,
someone
I
like
missed
that,
that.
Brandon Kempter.
Brandon Kempter.
Yeah. He like loves the art form of it. And he, for him, I'm like, of course it's going to be something that's worth the risks. And like, he's spoken to me about even like Brandon, who's so like, you know, OCD about everything. He, well, I shouldn't use that word, but he's very regimented and he's very adherent.
I don't think you're taking offense to that.
Yeah, well, he even he has had like, you know, binge eating, some body image stuff that he's sort of spoken to me about. And I think there's some facts that need to be sort of discussed as far as some risks and cons of competing in physique sports. It's basically sending you down a path of disordered eating, potentially moving more towards that eating disorder end of the spectrum. In fact, a lot of the cases, yes, it's setting you up for negative body image. I think they're the most often spoken about cons. And there's also physical health cons. Like for a lot of females, it could be the loss of the menstrual cycle and the consequences that come with that. But for me, there's another angle, which is when we think about what health actually is. and health involving more than just physical and mental health. We have social health, we have financial health. And, you know, a physique competition prep is going to impact all of those things. For example, you know, your ability to function at work and how that might affect your income. Also, comp prep isn't a, you know, can be an expensive thing.
Yeah.
So there's a financial health thing going on there. And then let's be honest, you're not hanging out with your mates. So there's a social health risk and cost that needs to be considered as well. And, you know, I think emotionally there can also be a lot of things there. So like we will probably all agree that there are some pretty hefty risks and cons, trade-offs and costs, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, for most people that compete, they probably haven't considered the risk versus reward, or they've probably got that tunnel vision thing like we spoke about before, where they've sort of been pushed into it by the people they're around, or they've felt just like there's some reason why they should do it. And it's not like a genuine love for bodybuilding. I think the business side of things is like a different, maybe not a different kettle of fish, but it's a,
probably it's the a, most it's a viable pretty, reason.
Yeah, it's viable.
Absolutely loving the sport. Do you know what I mean? I see the business side of things for coaches and stuff like that. If they are coaching other
100%.
Coaches, yeah.
I see that to be probably the second most viable thing after I just fucking love bodybuilding.
Oh, 100%.
But below that, but I find it very hard to make a case for the pros or the rewards, sorry, outweighing the risks outside of those two situations.
Yeah.
Where someone just loves the sport and, or they have that benefit for their business. Outside of that, I find it really hard to make a strong argument where, hey, this is actually going to benefit your life long term.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. Like for me, the main two benefits are commercial benefits or genuine love for the art form of prep and bodybuilding. If geez, I would really be like, I don't know about that. If anyone tried to convince me that there were sort of other benefits that would be worthwhile, but that's just my view.
Yeah. Mel, what are your thoughts on that? I can see you deep in thought there.
Yeah, I am. I'm just reflecting, which I agree a lot with what you've said. And what also comes to my mind is that it's something that you can't get on that stage for because someone else has told you about it or because someone else thinks that you should do it. You've really got to consider, what is your purpose? What is your fundamental reason for being on that stage? You know, and just as what you were saying, like Mac, I loved what you were saying there about, you know, what is actually, you know, well-being. What does that actually include and encapsulate? Because I think it demands so much. And so to know that, you know, your reasons and that it's coming from, you know, your reasons.
Yeah. No, I think, yeah, having good reasons is absolutely critical. But the hard thing I think a lot of people deal with is that they don't know what their own reasons are.
Mm-hmm.
Have someone external, whether it's a coach who's helping them do a, you know, 8-week mini cut, and then they're like, oh, you should do a show. Or they have friends at the gym say, oh, you should compete. You know, you've got great glutes. Or they see it online, they see someone else competing, they're like, oh, I want to look like that. It's very hard for people now to, I guess, discern whether that reason is truly intrinsic or not.
Because or how so it serves in their life. Like, how is it going to fit?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and having an honest, having a conversation with a professional, you know, like you guys that will be able to provide some insight that perhaps they haven't thought about.
Unfortunately, I think there's a lot of dollars to be made from the professional's end. So it's a situation where they're going to say, look, I don't think you should compete, because steering someone away from competing, they're going to go do it with someone else, and that usually means financial costs. So it's a really tricky one. I have honestly, I try to be as objective as I can and treat people who come to me for contest prep as I'm discussing it now. I don't just tell everyone, yeah, get on stage. I've turned a lot of people down. But at the end of the day, most of them have gone on with another coach, and yeah, what can you do? Do I think maybe they would have done not a better job necessarily with me, but have a safer experience possibly? So there's always that kind of consideration as well. It's a tricky one, but nonetheless, I think we've given everyone a lot to think about. I think there's plenty of benefits to a contest prep, but I do think you have to have a very good reason why, as the guys have explained, and you need to consider all those drawbacks. So Mel and Mac, thank you guys for jumping on. I really appreciate your time.
A pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks for the
invitation. Thanks for having us.
All right, guys. Thank you for joining us, and we'll speak to you next time.